Morning, all again, my brothers and sisters. Welcome. You may notice that Mr. Thane and Heather and Lyle all dressed warmly. Me too, as is Aiden, who's taping this. The heat's out in the church, and we're preaching to you from the balmy sanctuary of Living Hope Christian Fellowship, which is pushing between 8 and 11 degrees. So, it'll sharpen my mind and keep me on track. God creates. God creates everything, all human beings everywhere, and all of life. And it just made me think, as Mr. Thane has already prayed, but may God have mercy on Burma. It's very close to our heart and our congregation. But he's the ruler, and so it's not inappropriate to pray that God would restore justice and peace and the rule of law and stop the persecution of people, what seems so often for profit, for the selfish gain of those in power and who control the military. God, please have mercy on Burma. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, this is the summary statement. It's right at the very beginning of all the two stories, the two overlapping narratives of creation that are about to follow. It clearly lets us know that everything that exists was created by God. He is the only uncreated being. So as you sit at home in your pajamas, or perhaps like me, dressed, I hope, I'm prophesying, everything you wear, see, touch, feel, taste, your coffee cup, your computer screen, the chair you sit on, the person beside you, family or friends, we're all created, spoke into existence by God himself. He created everything that exists, all the elements, the molecules, the atoms, protons, neutrons, electrons, quarks, bosons, all the stuff that makes up this entire cosmos was spoken into existence by God. Now, we may shape it and build stuff with it and make it, but we or create things with it, but we don't make anything out of nothing. Only God makes stuff out of nothing, and he gives it purpose. And we will read the entire first chapter all the way to chapter 2, verse 3 today. Just a side note, the chapter and verse divisions in the scriptures are not inspired of God, nor were they written in originally. They came probably almost 2,000 years after Genesis was originally given its form. And so the real break that happens in the creation story doesn't happen at the end of chapter 1. It happens at verse 2, or chapter 2, verse 3. Where we change from first creation narrative to the second creation narrative that gives a slightly different slant on things. What I want you to notice today is the incredible skill and artistry behind the weaving of this narrative. This is not a crudely written piece of literature. As a matter of fact, this literature is foundational to storytelling throughout the civilizations, all the civilizations where the Bible has touched. And I would say that's around the world. The whole way of depicting scenes and characters and actions and saying the purpose behind them and the way you weave a story that builds to a climax, you can trace so much of this right back to this beautiful story. And the inspired author, whom we believe who the person who gave most form to this was Moses. There's some editing that takes place after he dies. He didn't record his own death, but was incredibly sophisticated. And by repetitions of phrases and words, by the sequence of events, the progress and process of creation, the way the words multiply as we move to the high point of the story, and almost as though they multiply and yet slow down at the same time as we come to the high point of the story. By these, we'll know what the author's trying to tell us, who the hero of the story is, where the story is going, what is the purpose of creation, what is the purpose of human beings, what gives structure to existence. So one of the first things I want to do is just go over one of the big patterns we'll see before I move into the progress and process of creation. Starts off in Genesis 1, verse 1 and 2 say this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and empty, and darkness covered the deep waters, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of the waters. Notice this phrase, formless and empty. That's a Hebrew figure of speech. The two words are tohu and vohu. And the connecting word and, which is attached to the front of vohu, spelled bohu. So it would sound like this, tohu vavohu. It's very catchy. And it's a way, the kind of words we'd have to say that are helter, skelter, or topsy-turvy. You know, two words when you mash them together communicate this idea of chaos. Unformed and unfilled creation. It's uninhabitable and it has no inhabitants. In other words, and it's not suitable for human life. And that's the very sort of head statement is this is the form of creation that God started working on, making it into a suitable and beautiful habitation for human beings. And so tohu and vavohu are replaced, formless and empty are replaced by forming and filling over the 6 days of creation. And they're divided into 2 3-day triads. And the first 3 days are about forming, and the second are about filling. So we see light is formed, and then it is filled or given a place of realm. It comes from the sun, the moon, and the stars. That one's harder to see, but it is the pattern. The sky and the seas are formed. Birds and fish inhabit them. That's day 2 and day 4. And on day 3 and day 6, which are highlighted, we see dry land, which is the habitation for human beings, and the land animals. And just a note, has your life ever felt tohu vavohu, formless and empty, needing to be filled? There's an invitation in here, particularly as we read this after the fall of mankind, when in a way emptiness and formlessness has come upon human beings, when chaos has re-entered our lives, there's an invitation for God to re-enter the creative process, to come back to God who speaks life into things that are dead. Now, as we read the first chapter, I want you to pay attention to what the following things that this brilliant writer has done in the process and progress of creation. And I'll try and highlight it as we go through. I have to give this thanks and acknowledgement at the beginning. These things are recognized broadly through all Bible-committed scholars. But I want to give particular attention to two of my professors from Regent College, Dr. Bruce Walke and Dr. Rick Watts, professors of Old and New Testament at Regent College who've provided much of the material I'm going to share with you today. So the progress and the process of creation. Watch for these things as the author has woven them in his speaking or in his writing. First, the progress of creation. You'll notice there's a movement from heaven to earth. Okay, think of God coming down and preparing a place for us. From uninhabitable chaos to the habitable food-producing earth. From non-living items to living creatures. And from living creatures to human beings in God's image. And the way this narrative history is constructed in the progress of creation leads us to the climax, the high point of creation, which is us enjoying the Sabbath rest of God with God. And it becomes an invitation for us to enter into God's Sabbath rest as heaven comes to earth. Now, the process of creation, and this is going to take a little more time to go through because this is woven in deeply. And I know it's so much material, and perhaps this won't all stick with you, but I want you to pay attention and catch some of these as you realize how beautifully God is communicating through this writer to us, his intention and purpose. So the process of creation, it begins with an announcement. And then God said. And that declares, actually, the main actor, the hero of the story, is God. And God creates by his word. The Greek word is logos. He creates by his word, by logos, and his spirit. Which reminds us that words bind together. And, you know, the things that we do so often mirror the binding of God with words. When a man and a woman get married, and I say these very words in a marriage ceremony, now with your words, bind yourself together. Words bind a couple together in marriage. When you become a citizen of a country, Canada, for example, you bind yourself to this nation of people with your words. Words bind together. And the words of God bond God and his creation. God is not out there somewhere, but he's intimately bonded with this creation. It's not a separate matter to him or an afterthought. He has bonded himself with creation, and in particular us. It's why Jesus identifies himself as the Word. He was the agent of creation. The Father created everything through the Word by his Spirit. And that when we see Jesus, John identifying Jesus as the Word, he's actually saying, this is your creative agent. The Creator has tabernacled with us. And Jesus, the God-man, binds divinity and humanity together. The Word of God binds us together. And humans are recreated and born again into God's family, God's kingdom, as by his Spirit, as we confess with our mouths and believe in our hearts that Jesus is Lord. Words bind us together. Words bind God to his creation, and we bind ourselves back to God by our true confession. So notice, there's an announcement. Then God said, then there's a commandment, let there be, or something similar. God's will and his word are irresistible. There's simply no power greater than his word. When God declares something to be, it is, and you cannot resist it. Note once again that when Jesus declares someone sin or forgiven by his word, he is speaking in the power and place of God. And it is an unchangeable reality. Notice also when Jesus heals someone with a word, he's recreating them. He's creating their body anew, the broken part anew. He recreates that which is broken. Also notice that on the sixth day, the commandment goes from let there be to let us make. And there's an intensifying and a personalizing of God with creation as he comes to us. Then there's the report. And there was, or so God made. This is what happened. He speaks, and out of nothing, something comes to being. Again, the narrator is driving home this point over and over again. Nothing exists that God did not make. The earth is here by his express will. Then there's the naming. The first 3 days are named, and the elements of them. God named, called the space sky. It named it. He's the supreme ruler over all the elements in the cosmos. And naming indicates rule and control and sovereignty over something. He names the darkness. The darkness is not apart from his rule. He names both light and darkness, waters and land. Naming is a way of showing you have dominion over something. It's why he gives Adam the authority to name the animals, actualizing his reign and the reign of human beings over them. And dominion doesn't mean dominate and destroy and exploit. It means care and shepherd and steward as God stewards his creation. And God also names the good and the elements that we would say are hostile to human creation. He names both light and land, which are necessary for us, and the darkness and the sea. And you need to know that sea, in Old Testament jargon, was the place that was inhospitable to human land. And darkness, well, that metaphor is picked up all through the scriptures as not the most favorable place to be. And God bounds these areas that are hostile to human life. They're set within limits. He bounds the darkness by light. And he bounds the sea by line and by land and says, thus far you will come and no further. Things that are hostile to life are here, but they're bounded by God and under his dominion. We, God's creatures, can trust God through the storms of life and the events that we seemingly have no control over, God does. Again, you can see this in Jesus. Remember the sea hostile to life? Remember the time when the disciples, having finished ministry, were with Jesus in the Sea of Galilee, and Jesus was tired and asleep, and the disciples are straining at the oars, and the storm was threatening to swamp and sink their little boat. And they awaken Jesus. And Jesus, demonstrating his authority and control over the hostile sea, simply gets up and says, peace, be still. And so it was. God is the supreme ruler and controller of all elements of the earth. And you'll notice also how the Bible is a holistic story. When we come to the final book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, there is only light, and there's no more sun or moon because the light of God is there and the Lamb is its lamp. And also makes another, what might seem curious statement. He says, and there is no more sea. In other words, nothing that is hostile to human life is there. The new heavens and the new earth is completely holy and perfect for human habitation. Then after this, there comes the evaluation, and it was good. Notice on the sixth day, it goes from not only good to very good. And notice it's also not called good on the second day, because the life support elements for human life are not in place. And yet on the third day, when we have dry ground and vegetation, both of which humans need, it's called good twice. And again, the sixth day is very good, because all that's needed for human life is in place. And we are here. And finally, there's a chronology. This repetition, there's evening and morning, and then the X day, first, second, third day. God is Lord even over time and creates the basic units of time. The week is the basic unit of time that he gives us. And when we come to the seventh day, notice this. There's no phrase, there is evening and morning. The seventh day, God's Sabbath rest, has no end. And it becomes an invitation for us to enter eternal time with him, his eternal rest. And for those of you who read the New Testament in the book of Hebrews, pick it up. This phrase is picked up there when we're invited to enter into God's Sabbath rest. That's how the book of Hebrews asks people to be born again or to become Christ followers. And the phraseology is to enter into God's eternal Sabbath rest. With all that said, let us read in the New Living Translation, Genesis verse 1:1 to Genesis chapter 2 verse 3. Ready, set? Here we go. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and empty, and darkness covered the deep waters. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of the water. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. Notice already God's putting a boundary in between what's good for human life and what is not as good. And he declares the light good. Those elements that are good for humanity, for good for human flourishing, are called good. God called the light day and the darkness night. And evening passed and morning came, marking the first day. Then God said, "Let there be a space between the waters to separate the waters of the heavens from the waters of the earth." And that is what happened. God made the space to separate the waters of the earth from the waters of the heaven. God called the space sky. Space sky. Notice there is no evaluation of good here because these places, sky and sea, are not suitable for human life. You start to see he's painting the picture that what is what is good for human flourishing. That's the point of creation, is a place for human flourishing in the image of God and in the presence of God. And evening passed and morning came, marking the second day. Now we come to the third day, and notice there'll be two acts of creation and two evaluations of good. And there are more words as we move towards support of human life. Then God said, "Let the waters beneath the sky flow together in one place, and so dry ground may appear." And that is what happened. God called the dry ground land, and the water seas. And God saw that it was good. And again, God has kept the sea in its boundary. Then God said, "Let the land sprout with vegetation, every sort of seed-bearing plant and trees that grow seed-bearing fruit. These seeds will produce the kinds of plants and trees from which they come." And that is what happened. God speaks and it happens. The land produced vegetation, all sorts of seed-bearing plants and trees with seed-bearing fruit. The seed produced plants and trees of the same kind. And God saw that it was good. Again, a second positive evaluation. Fruit and plants that are edible for us and will sustain life. And evening passed and morning came, marking the third day. Now we come to 3 days of filling. We've got these three arenas. Now God gives inhabitants to these arenas. Then God said, "Let lights appear in the sky to separate the day from the night. Let them be signs to mark the seasons, the days, and the years. Let these lights in the sky shine down on the earth." And that is what happened. God made two great lights, the larger one to govern the day and the smaller one to govern the night. He also made the stars. Notice that. He also made the stars. With almost a throw-off phrase, he speaks into existence billions upon billions of magnificent, light-giving, energy-producing, beautiful stars. And it just says, he also made the stars. God set these lights in the sky to light the earth, to govern the day and the night, to separate the light from the darkness. Once again, God puts boundaries on that which is hostile to life. Darkness is bounded by light. And even the darkness is illuminated by the light of his word and what he has created. And God saw that it was good. And evening passed and morning came, marking the fourth day. Now he's going to fill the skies and the sea. Then God said, "Let the waters swarm with fish and other life. Let the skies be filled with birds of every kind." So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that scurries and swarms in the water, and every sort of bird, each producing offspring of the same kind. And God saw that it was good. And now the first blessing, it comes on animate life. As life comes closer and is more like humanity, it receives the blessing of God. And the blessing, and when God blesses things, because you're going to notice this here, when God blesses things, they multiply and are fruitful. When God blesses your fields, they produce an abundance of fruit and grain. When God blesses your flocks, they produce an abundance of calves and lambs. And when God blesses the womb of humans, they produce an abundance of children. Blessing is multiplying, is giving more of the same, of giving more of life. Then God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply. Let the fish fill the seas and the birds multiply on the earth." And evening passed, and morning came, marking the fifth day. Now notice as the narrative expands, and as we come to earthbound life, it will expand in words and almost slow down, particularly as we come to humanity. Almost more delicate, more intentional. It's drawing attention to the point and the reason of creation. Then God said, let the earth produce every sort of animal, each producing offspring of the same kind. Livestock, small animals that scurry along the ground, and wild animals. And that is what happened. God made all sorts of wild animals, livestock and small animals, each able to produce offspring of the same kind. And God saw that it was good. And there's two evaluations of good on this day that mirror the double blessing on the third day of good. Earth and vegetation that provide a place and food for animals and human beings. Now a change in wording as we come to the announcement indicating humans are different from anything and everything else that's been created before. Different from the animals. Indeed, everything in creation. Humanity stands at the peak of creation. Then God said, let us make human beings in our image to be like us. They will reign over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, the livestock and all the wild animals on the earth, and all the small animals that scurry along the ground. So God created human beings in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Notice the slowing down, the intensification of the personal act and involvement of God in the creation of human beings. The skillful storyteller is telling us something about our dignity, but what it means to be a human being. And then the words of God upon us. Then God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and govern it. Reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, and all the animals that scurry along the ground. And the author will expand on this in the next account of Adam. When Adam, the animals are brought to Adam and he names them, indicating his dominion and his reign and his authority over them. Then God said, look, I have given you every seed-bearing plant throughout the earth and all the fruit trees for your food. And I have given every green plant as food for all the animals, the birds in the sky, the small animals that scurry along the ground, everything that has life. And that is what happened. Then God looked over all he had made and saw that it was very good. What is being communicated is that everything is necessary for human life and human flourishing and human dominion and reign and operating in the image of God, exercising stewardship over the earth and all its creation is complete. And it makes it clear that this is our home, made for us. We are not accidental products of evolution that just happen to become conscious. Everything in the universe and this home has been made for us and our flourishing. And evening passed and morning came, marking the sixth day. Now we move into the seventh day, which is different than the others. So the creation of the heavens and the earth and everything in them was completed. And on the seventh day, God had finished his work of creation, so he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy, because it was the day when he rested from all his work of creation. Notice this. There is no phrase that has been repeated over and over again. And evening passed and morning came, marking the sixth day. It's not repeated for the seventh day. And it's so skillfully written. Raises the open question. The listeners of this material would have been very sophisticated in being able to understand it. What's being communicated here is there's no end to God's Sabbath rest. It's the high point. Humans are invited to enter God's rest with him. Eternity opens up here. Now, I want to make a few notes for us on this whole story, this narrative. And by saying story, I don't mean fiction, as in made up. I mean skillfully told narrative history, history which has written with a point to it, which has God's point written to it. There is a point to creation. We are not random. We don't have to make up meaning. God has given us meaning. This story is for all human beings, and in particular, Genesis is your family history and my family history. It is written to everybody in the community of faith. It's not just written to the Jews of Moses' day. It has always been written to the community of faith, and it's picked up all the way through the scriptures. It is written to the people who enter into the community of faith by having the faith of Moses, who believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. These words have always been meant for the community, for the covenant community, for those who speak the words that create a bond between God and us. What I want you to do is imagine putting your own name in this place, because it's true. This is your story. Let us make Frank in the image of God. In our image and in the image of God, he created Frank. Let us make Joe or Anya or Sally or Kiki. Let us make them in our image. And in the image of God, he made Anya and Kiki and Sally and Aiden. He made you. The Apostle Paul makes it clear that if we have faith like Abraham, who believed God, we are part of this covenant community, and these words are for us, because it is not by physical birth that you enter into this community, but always and only by faith in the God who raised his son from the dead. Romans chapter 15, verse 4 says this: "For everything that was written in the past was written to teach us, so that through the endurance taught in the scriptures and the encouragement they provide, we might have hope." These scriptures, brothers and sisters, were written for you and for me. The Genesis story is for you and for me. It is our story, and it's an invitation to enter into the Sabbath rest of God. Now, Bruce Waltke, my beloved professor, and I say that if you ever hear his words, he's just so in love with the Creator of all things. He says this: "Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are our fathers. These words are for us. This is an ancient word for your situation, for you in your struggles and your life, that you might know how God relates to people." Who cannot identify, and as we go through the book of Genesis, who cannot identify with the families of Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob and Esau, and their struggles? And who cannot identify with the family of Jacob when he has kids, and these multiple kids, and they have these inter-family conflicts, and they squabble with each other? And who cannot identify with the trouble that comes when you identify one child as your favorite? And who cannot identify with Jacob, who struggles with believing God and actually physically wrestles with the angel of the Lord? And these stories are our stories, and they're an invitation for us to enter in. These very real people, very much like us, these stumbling, bumbling schmucks with God, are an invitation for us to write our stories in with theirs. This writer has a point to make. These stories are meant to communicate, and this creation story is meant to communicate with the people of faith throughout history. It reveals who God is and who we are. And this artfully written narrative will continue to tell us what is good and what is life-giving and what brings blessing and what is opposed to life and goodness and what brings death. Stories and artfully written stories tell and remain with us. It's why Jesus taught in stories and in parable. And finally, the whole of the biblical narrative, it's our story. But all of sacred history points towards the eternal Son of God and his unfolding plan to unite all things in heaven and on earth together once again. It says all things will be united together through the Son of God, Jesus. It's all the scriptures lead and point and are our journey to Jesus. And that's why he makes clear. He says this about himself. I love the way the Message puts it. You have your heads in your Bibles and you constantly because you think you'll find eternal life there. But you miss the forest for the trees. These scriptures are all about me. And here I am standing right before you, and you aren't willing to receive from me the life you say you want. This story, and it's artfully written, and we're to imagine and see the skill in it. But the skill in this story is meant to point us to the skill giver, to the God behind the story, to the God who speaks things that are not and makes them to be. It's meant to point us to the creator of all things. It's just like good worship music. It's not supposed to have you just focusing on the notes and the sound and the music and saying, isn't this beautiful? But it's to inspire you to the author of beautiful music and to turn you up to the creator of art and beauty. God is inviting you to enter into his Sabbath rest, to enter into the holy, eternal garden city, to dwell with him and to confess and enter today. As you look at this beautiful creation, remember, God binds himself to us with his words and true creation with his words, but he has now put the choice back in our hands. Because when Adam and Eve turned from God, they unbound themselves from the life that is in him, and they chose life on their own. And what God is inviting us to now, to you and I, is to be bound once again to God. That's why the book of Romans say, if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart that Jesus is Lord, you will be saved. And this is not just repeating words, but it's repeating words with your soul. And it's a commitment of your soul. And you bind yourself with your will and your intention as spoken by your words back to the life of God. My brothers and sisters, God bound himself to this creation and made this world for us and invites us to bind ourselves to him in a holy spiritual marriage that lasts forever. Bind yourself to him today. Amen.